Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Do you remember having any childhood trauma? Were you bullied? Were you teased? Did you ever have to spend any time in the hospital?
I remember being in the hospital and I was in a red flyer wagon and I thought, this is great. Like, this is awesome. I've got my crayons and coloring books. I thought life was great. And then all of a sudden I remember, it's almost like I see it as if it would be in a movie.
What happened?
I was picked up out of my wagon and all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second, put me back in my wagon. And they set me on a table and I saw a gas mask just coming toward my face. And I didn't know that that was happening.
Today on Storyworthy, comedian Christian Carney talks about a traumatic time in her life dealing with crossed eyes. Stay close.
Hey, it's Christian Carney and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I'm so glad you guys tuned in today. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week with comedian Ryan Doon and his story, hashtag MeToo. Yes, exactly. Sexual harassment. That is what his story was about. And it's a really good one, you guys, so go back and listen to Ryan Doon's story. But not today, because today we're here with the lovely and talented Christian Carney. And I gotta tell you guys, this girl is so interesting and has such an authenticity about her. She's hosted many different podcasts, including with Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla. And now she has this new show called Mentally Chill, and we're gonna talk about that in a minute. But today she brings forth the topic, I Was a Cross-Eyed Kid. So I don't know if this, I'm not sure what exactly the story is going to be about, but I think it's going to be about maybe being bullied or something. Probably. Yeah. Because if, you know, being a cross-eyed kid could not be easy. I mean, I remember Gary Peeler, he had a lazy eye and people made fun of him. I remember Mark Shantz had bags under his eyes and he got made fun of. And you know what I got made fun of? Because I used to wear my hair in a ponytail on the side, a la Chrissy Snow from Three's Company. And in seventh grade, all these girls like ganged up on me and put, it's Christine Blackburn Day, on all the chalkboards in every classroom before I got to school.
I hate them.
And they all put their hair in ponytails on the side. And when I got to school, and it wasn't just the kids all wearing ponytails, and I'm just like looking like, what's happening? As I'm looking in the classrooms, passing, you know, walking down the hallway, and I'm looking into the classrooms, I see it written on every chalkboard. And Mr. Pilot and Mr. Corsetti, they had a ponytail in their hair. Like, the teachers were in on it. Everybody was doing it because it was supposedly funny, but not to me.
Anyway. Was it in more of a loving way?
No, it was in a cruel, horrible way.
Wow.
Well, the teachers weren't trying to be that way, but I don't think they understood. So, of course, I cried and, like, you know, I had to go to the office and wait for my mom to pick me up.
Yeah.
And it was a mess.
And then your mom shows up with a ponytail. You're like, not you, too.
God, that is, now I'm going to have nightmares. Thanks, Kristen. Now I'm going to have nightmares. You know, I went to the office and one friend came to the office and sat with me. They let her come and sit with me. Her name was Chris Blayhut, who was the valedictorian of my high school class, who later, very next year, got hit by a car at Ohio State and died.
Oh, dear God.
I know. So anyway, that was tragic, but Chris Blayhut did help me that day that I was essentially bullied. See, now there, back then, we called it teasing. So, and I guess everybody gets teased for something. I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I guess I teased kids. I guess I did. I don't know. But anyway, so your story, Kristen, I Was a Cross-Eyed Kid, I'm sure. I'm looking forward to hearing what this is, what happened, because now your eyes are beautiful. So obviously something changed.
Thank God. Well, so I'm kind of going to tell the story of actually just going through the process of discovering that I had a crossed eye as a kid.
Oh, wow.
And then get maybe a little bit into the bullying.
Okay. Before we do get to her story, you guys, I want to remind you to head over to my website, storyworthypodcast.com, because I'm always changing things over there. You have to check it out, Kristen, because things are changing and I'm moving things and I'm really good I'm really good building websites now. Do you do that?
I have to, unfortunately.
So do I.
Yeah,
what do you use?
A Squarespace.
So do I. Mm. See, we're very similar that way. Interesting. So you guys go over there and check that out. And don't forget to subscribe to Storyworthy on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or, you know, wherever you guys are listening to your podcasts. And by subscribing, you are truly giving me your support. And you know I need that. You know that. Okay, you guys, she's here right now, Kristen Carney. She's a comic and a writer, and she has co-hosted many different shows like Loveline with Dr. Drew, The Adam Carolla Show, and the Ask Women podcast. But her new podcast is really the one that is amazing and putting Kristen on the map. It's called Mentally Chill. You can find Mentally Chill over on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your shows. And you can find Kristen at KristenCarney.com and also on Twitter at Kristen Carney. Okay, you guys, let's hear about this cross-eyed girl. Put your hands together for Kristen Carney.
Put your glasses on for Kristen Carney.
There you go.
So I was 3 years old and my eyes started to cross. And up until that point, I clearly can't remember. I was only 3. But I'm assuming life was pretty great. Reality was amazing. I played with toys. I didn't look like a freak. You know, everything was going well. And then my eyes started to cross. And that's when reality hits. Reality as in the real world is all of a sudden now a thing to a 3-year-old. So my mom took me to a bunch of specialists. We eventually met this great surgeon. And my mom was really smart because you actually can't fix a crossed eye or the one that I have specifically called accommodative esotropia. That really can't be treated at a later age. You really have to get it when they're young. Otherwise, it's just stuck there, kind of. So luckily, I have a smart mother, and she found a great surgeon, and we immediately operated on it. But what I want to tell is my memory of the experience. I was 3 years old, and I don't remember anything at all until my first memory being in the hospital. I see it clear as day, and I remember being in the hospital, and I was in a red flyer wagon. And I thought, this is great. Like, this is awesome. I'm in a wagon. I've got my crayons and coloring books, and I've got my teddy bear. And there's like, and I've always liked adults. I don't know what, I've always felt very comfortable with adults. So I was like with adults, which was great. And I thought life was great. And then all of a sudden, I remember it's almost like I see it as if it would be in a movie. I was picked up out of my wagon, and all of a sudden, I'm like, wait a second. Hold on. Put me back in my wagon, and they set me on a table, and I saw a gas mask just coming toward my face. And I didn't, as far as I can remember, I didn't know why a gas, I didn't know that that was happening. This was all kind of hitting me so abruptly. Like, I knew I was there for something, but I didn't know it was going to be scary. I should say, prior to that, my actual first memory is being in the hotel room, because we lived quite a ways from the hospital, and I couldn't eat for 24 hours before my surgery. And I remember my dad sitting at a round table, actually like this. It was just a round table with seats just like this. It's like very vintage feeling. This is what it looked like. And he was eating a pizza. And my mom said, John, don't eat in front of her. She can't eat for 24 hours. And my dad is amazing, and I love him to death. But he said, she's all right. And I remember thinking, no, I'm not all right. I want some pizza. So that was my actual first memory before the surgery. Then cut to, I've got the gas mask and I just see it come over my face. And then the next thing I remember is waking up in my hospital bed and seeing just the sterile environment. It was a very, very large room that I was in. It was like a recovery room. And I don't know if there were other people in it, but I remember I threw up on my pillow. And when I threw up on my pillow, I asked the nurse for a new one. And I remember being afraid that my mom, you know, where was my mom? What's happening? I just threw up on my pillow. I asked her for a new pillow. And the nurse just came over. And this was actually the moment that I was welcomed into the world. Like, this was reality, because she came over and just flipped my pillow with the vomit on it in tow. And I remember thinking, even as 3-year-old, like, really? That's all you could, really? You can't just get me a new pillow? It was like, her work ethic was as lazy as my eye, basically. And so she flipped the pillow, and I remember just starting to cry, like scream cry. Like I just wanted my mom. I didn't know what was happening. And so I remember my mom coming into the hospital, and I remember seeing my mom cry. And my mom said that I looked so, and I mean, in the scheme of the world, like it wasn't cancer, I wasn't dying, but it was such a traumatizing experience for me. And also my mom, who's a young mom. And she said, she came in and she cried. And I remember seeing her crying. And she said, because I looked so, I don't know if forlorn is the best word, but I was basically only in a pair of white underwear, totally nude. I had vomit around me, my eyes. And so this is the next part of the story. My eyes were completely, from the surgery, the whites of my eyes were completely filled with blood. And so I basically looked like a blood dying, like just corpse baby. And it was very upsetting for her, very shocking. And the reason I was vomiting was because during the surgery, apparently I was coming to, and so they had to give me more anesthesia, and eventually became too much. And so then I was getting sick. And so then I stayed in the hospital, I think just for a few more hours. I don't think it was something that I had to stay in overnight, but my next memory is being given a puke bin to take home, or one of those, you know, like pee, what do they call it? Like a pee thing? I don't know. A pan, like a whatever you'd put under your bed or something. And so I remember holding this puke pee thing, and I was in a little red jacket, and I remember it had like the buttons looked like little candies. And I remember my dad holding me, and we went home, and I was throwing up the entire car ride home. I remember it so clearly. And then from there forward, I couldn't, because of the surgery, I couldn't open my eyes on my own in the morning because the blood would be crusted. My eyes were crusted shut from the blood. And so when I'd wake up, I remember it was so traumatizing because I wouldn't be able to see. And so it was, I knew I wasn't blind, but I'd wake up in the morning and it would be like, ah, I can't see anything. I can't open my eyes. And I'd, you know, yell to my mom, and my mom would come, and she had like a little cotton ball with solution or water and dab my eyes until it, you know, loosened, and then I could open my eyes. But I had a brother and a sister and cousins, and they were all a little bit older. And so I became, my nickname became Wolfman because of the bloodshot eyes, and they love me to death. It was not like a mean-spirited thing, but I became Wolfman. And so I was a 3-year-old little girl, Wolfman, and it really shaped who I became as a person and an adult. And so following the surgery, I had to wear really thick glasses because my vision was actually 20/20. It was like my eyes were crossed, but I was still seeing 20/20 vision. But in order to fix my eyes, they had to ruin my vision, I guess. I really still don't understand it. So I was then prescribed incredibly thick Coke bottle glasses, and I had to wear a patch over my eye, and it would be on my right eye because my left eye was the weak eye or something like that. So I was a 3-year-old Wolfman eye patch glasses wearing nerd. And then eventually, you know, a couple weeks went by and the blood went away and all that stuff. But it really shaped who I became as a person. And from that point on, it was that, you know, you wear glasses, and it was like, I just prayed for the day I could wear contacts. But the problem with not the surgery, but the outcome was amazing. My eyes are straight, but they're only held straight with glasses or contacts. So if I take out my contact right now, my eyes cross. And so it's a secret kind of that I live with. And so when I go to bed at night, I can't sleep in my contacts, take out my contacts, put on my glasses. And it's been, I remember when I was a little bit younger and was starting to date, I didn't want a guy to see me, you know, in the morning, because if I open my eyes, they're instantly crossed. So it was something, like I said, that shaped me, but and that I'm kind of grateful for, but also a little bit angry at. You know, I took synchronized swimming as a kid because that's what everyone in my town did. And I'd have to stand there because I couldn't wear glasses in the pool. I'd have to stand there like covering because my left eye would cross more than my right. So I'd stand there with my, you know, hand over my eye until I could run and put my glasses back on to straighten my eyes back out. And so to this day, I get pretty paranoid that my eye might be crossing. And I also am slightly paranoid that as I get older, my muscles will weaken and my eye will start to cross again. But the doctor assured me that that's not going to happen. We have yet to see that because I'm in my 30s. So I'm thinking maybe in my 60s, I might start worrying about it again. But that's the story.
Wow. Kristen, that is an intense story.
Yeah.
And there is nothing about that funny. I feel like we should go back into the intro and redo the whole thing. Because this is a lot of childhood trauma. So you were three?
Three, yeah.
3 years old in that little red coat with the candy buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those are that vivid memories.
Yeah. And I just knew I looked, in my mind, I looked like a monster. You know, my perception of myself from a very young age was that I was not right. Like, I looked like a monster.
Wow.
And that I would scare people or make people uncomfortable, even though obviously not the case.
Isn't
but in
that,
your mind, that's how
so
you see it.
Unbelievable. Yeah. If somebody would meet you, and I've known you for several years, I never knew the story about your eye.
Yeah. I actually kept it really quiet until a few years ago. And then I was like, I'll talk about it. Because I started trying to do jokes about it on stage.
I think it's fascinating. You know, you never know what somebody else goes through. It's like we have to be so compassionate as citizens of the world to one another, because you have no idea.
You don't. You have no idea. And actually, I kind of take that concept a little too far, because if someone's really mean for no reason, I've said this like twice, but I've basically said, this one lady, she was kind of crazy. And, you know, I knew she was not someone who was very logical, but she said to me, your dog thinks you're a bad mom, because I was with my dog. And that was really offensive to me, because my dog's actually like a special needs dog. And I am so compassionate and caring and exceptional to this insane dog that I care for and love and whatever. So I was very offended, even though I don't usually offend. And so I just said, why would you be mean to someone for no reason? I said, you have no idea. Like, you don't know that actually what I'm dealing with is I have cancer. And I don't have cancer.
Yeah.
But I said it because I wanted her to know that, like, you don't know what someone else is going through.
I totally hear you. I think I'm sure. In fact, I'm sure I've done that at some point in my life, where at some point you just turn and say to somebody, like, no, wait a minute. Think about that behavior. Just think about what you just did.
Right.
And we need to do that, I think, more as an entire society with sexual harassment. You know, just stop in your tracks and say, did you hear what you just said?
Right.
You can't do that.
Right.
It's almost like racism or a lot of other things that we can't, and bullying for that matter.
Yeah, it's like taking a moment of reflection to realize, you know, sometimes like if you're in traffic and I'll be like, I blah, 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 blah. And then I stop and I'm like, I just sounded kind of dumb.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not hearing me. I'm in my car. But it's like you need that moment. Maybe that person is on their way to a hospital to see their dying mother.
Yeah, they just got bad news. Or they're just jerks.
Or they're just jerks.
There could
probably
be that too.
That's most likely.
I think back, back, you know, 25 years ago or whatever, I think they did used to like over anesthetize people, like too much anesthesia. I mean, if you were only three, you were probably 35 or 40 pounds.
Right.
So you were tiny.
Right.
And then they probably maybe gave you too many drugs. That's why you got so sick.
Yeah. And I think because it was like they were using gas masks.
Because
I know, you know, they use intravenous now or something for the anesthesia.
Of course,
so maybe
of course.
It's like the control element isn't there. So you kind of just blast them with the gas.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I don't
just
really know.
It's the saddest thing. I'm just so sorry that happened to you.
Yeah.
My daughter had to get some dental work done when she was very young, like two. And I remember the way they had to anesthetize her. Like you can't just numb a 2-year-old's mouth. They're not going to hold their mouth open.
Yeah.
So they have to put her out, as it were.
Right.
And it was so, my gosh, it was so traumatic to have that happen. So I had to hold her, and then they injected her calf with a syringe that put her to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that was all about.
That's
but
weird.
It was
the calf.
Yeah, and then they took the baby from me. Then they took the baby away from me.
It's traumatizing.
It was very traumatizing. But I can't imagine picking you up out of a wagon and throwing that over your face.
Yeah, you think about a little 3-year-old and, you know, at this giant scary mask that looks like it should be in, you know, some Cold War.
And you said you were, you know, it was such a big room, but I think that's probably because you were just such a little kid.
Yeah, if I saw it now, I'd probably be like, wow, that's teeny. It's smaller than my bathroom.
It seems like, you know, you kind of are an old spirit, probably because of this lesson of reality you had to learn at such a young age.
Yeah, I definitely think I'm always curious what I would be like now if this didn't happen, because I've always seen myself as an old soul, and I feel more like, you know, that's where the comic part comes out from, you know, the trials and tribulations and things. So I always wonder, if I didn't go through this, what the outcome would have been. Would I have just grown into this super bitchy girl who just picked on other people? Or I don't think that's in my nature, but I'm curious how it, you know, it's like you can choose your ending in the story. I just don't know what the other ending would have been.
So what do you mean though by, you know, you went the comedy route? In other words, because you were made fun of, or because you weren't accepted?
Well, it was, I think, a combination. So I was definitely not accepted. Yeah. I was very picked on and bullied. But I think I naturally gravitate toward comedy because my dad is insanely funny. Mm-hmm. My dad is so, so funny. And I also, I'm naturally, I think, very sensitive. So I think the combination shaped me into being more of the comedic type.
So wait, so is your dad alive now?
Yes.
Oh, good. Where's he live?
He is where I grew up in upstate New York.
In upstate New York, mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you go back?
A lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
no kidding.
I'm really close with my parents.
Even in the winter?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, yeah, I say I love the winter, but it's like because I go back for Christmas and I'm not there for February and March and
right.
January when it's
yeah,
ugly.
You like it for 2 week sprints, but
yeah.
You're not gonna, you know, you're in the third yeah. week of April and it's still gray slush outside.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so hard. I mean, there seems to be really like about 12 good weeks of the year back there for some reason.
Oh, not even. I feel like there's two.
Yeah.
And then you're probably really in a bad mood for the one of those. So you get one good week.
So now that what you deal with, do you go to an ophthalmologist frequently now or?
I don't actually. I just go to a regular optometrist.
Yeah, I always forget the difference.
Yeah, but I did recently have, I got an ulcer on my eyeball recently,
oh, no.
About a year ago, which was really bizarre. And it's from most likely from overuse of contacts.
Wow.
Because I do, I mean, I live in my contacts because yeah. when I take them out, again, the crossing happens. I don't sleep in them for the most part. Occasionally I do, but I'm not supposed to shower. And
yeah. Are they the hard kind, as it were?
No, I have just, they're supposed to be like, you wear them for like a month and then,
oh, wow.
and then throw them away. I mean, I wear them for more like 3 months because I'm poor and they're expensive.
Yeah.
But I think, so basically I think what happened was my contact scratched my eye and then it got infected and an ulcer kind of grew on it.
No, oh my.
It was
oh
the most painful.
Really?
It was so insane.
How long did you let it go on for?
It was about 4 days until finally I went, because I have like Medicaid, like poor people insurance,
yeah.
like Medi-Cal, because I'm a poor person. And so going to the doctor isn't the easiest, because the only place I can
I
go
know.
Is the county yep. hospital.
Right. A lot of the doctors are far away.
Yeah. And they don't, most don't accept Medi-Cal or LA Care, which is what I have. So you have to go to the county hospital, which is a nightmare. And so my eye was killing me. And my mom said, we'll go get some eye wash. Maybe you've got something yeah. in there. And so I kept washing it out. But when I took my contact out to like close my eye to go to sleep, it felt like I literally had like 5 knives in my eye.
Oh my God.
So
that's horrible.
The first night I held my eye open to fall asleep. I basically held my eye open so my eyelid wasn't
yeah,
touching my
it.
Eye.
Yeah. Oh wow.
And then I went about 4 or 5 days later, I finally went and the only way I was getting through it was wearing my contact lens, because wearing my contact over it didn't allow my eyelid to scratch
yeah.
and stuff.
Yeah, sure.
So that's how I was sleeping and stuff. So I was making it worse. But then they just, you know, so I went to an ophthalmologist.
I see.
After
I
that,
see.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it's so extensive. I'm so sorry, and I feel bad that you have to go through that. You know, that anxiety about being fearful about your eyes
yeah.
all the time. I have that sort of fear about my teeth, because I have a couple laminates on my teeth, and I've lost laminates
mm-hmm.
in really bad situations in the middle of places where, you know, I'm out. It's
well,
bad.
I know. I can match you on that one. I had a huge space between my front teeth.
Yeah.
And so I got bonding on
yeah,
my front
sure.
teeth, and that has fallen out occasionally as well. And so I would have nightmares about my teeth falling out.
Yeah, but the thing
it's
is, at the end of the day, Kristen, what this is about is being out of control.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Yeah, and I actually talked about that recently, because now I micromanage my image. I mean, I don't have like that cool of an image or whatever, but I micromanage how people perceive me. I
yeah.
try to anyway. Like I don't, because I felt like I was out of control as a child because I had these huge glasses and a patch over my eye.
You were out of control. You didn't have any say in what was going on.
Right. And so once I started to understand how to do my, and this is not tragic at all, but the combination just didn't make for the most confidence in a kid, but I had insanely thick frizzy hair and the space between my teeth. I wasn't super cute. Like I was not a good looking kid.
Wow.
And so once I started to understand like, ooh, this is how you do eye makeup. And this is how you get your hair to be not so crazy and huge. And this is how you can dress. I started to obsess with it because I could finally control the way people saw me.
It's so interesting. And you are so beautiful.
Thank you very much.
No, it's so interesting. Hey, by the way, did you know that there are people now that are tattooing their eyes, the white part, red? Like gang members.
What?
Yeah. And oh, so that they always are bloodshot. Like you can do black or you can do red or green. People do like the white part a different color. Isn't that gross?
It's really dumb. And I'm the original. Like I'm the OG original gangster of the red.
It's permanent.
That's so dumb.
I know. Isn't that crazy? So you'd always be the wolf man.
Yeah. Maybe one day when I have nothing else to live for, I could just be like, hey, at least I have an identity.
Do you have any wolf tattoos?
No.
I think you should get one. Or just that'd maybe be like funny. A claw.
That'd be funny.
I think it'd be appropriate.
Well, on my podcast, Mentally Chill, my co-host Stevie and I, may she rest in peace. She said that kids called her Frankenstein because she had a scar on her forehead.
No kidding.
And it looked like kind of like a Frankenstein mark. And I said I was Wolfman. So we were Frankenstein and Wolfman.
That is so interesting. Yeah. Yeah, so, that's funny.
So we're going to make t-shirts.
That's a great idea. I can't get over how cruel children can be. I feel like, you know, if and when my daughter's made fun of, just to have her embrace it or just, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing is like, you know, if you had the life experience as a kid.
Of course.
You would go, oh, this is, yeah, I'm Wolfman.
Yeah.
Cool. Like, cool guys. Like, this is pretty badass. But, you know, at that age, you can't see outside of the little world that you're in the moment.
Of course.
It doesn't seem like it'll ever get better. And it seems like those people are the most important people ever. And then you realize, obviously, once you get older that they're not.
Of course. Of course. So let's talk about your podcast, Mentally Chill. You know, it is a podcast about depression. And I am so sorry about your co-host.
Thank you.
I mean, I just can't get over that the co-host of your show about depression then took her own life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cliche.
Must be the hardest thing for you and her friends and her family.
Yeah. It's not been pleasant whatsoever. I don't ever really know how to summarize it or where to begin. Her name was Stevie Ryan. You guys can look her up. She had her own TV show on VH1, and she was one of the first YouTube stars back in like 2008, 2009. So she had a really large following, and people loved her. And when you look her up, or if you do know her, you will agree, there was something so special about her.
Yeah.
She was so charismatic and so funny and so real and such a badass. She's from Victorville. Which is a little bit gangster, I think. And so she kind of had a little bit of this gangster quality where
it's like
it was like
Inland Empire, really.
But, yeah. Yeah. And I feel like there should be a show like Inland, like, you know, the show Empire.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Inland Empire.
Like, yeah. But she was like the type of person that if she liked you, she was your homie forever, you know, and would throw down for you. There was something really hardcore about her. But also incredibly, there was something so sensitive about her as well. And she was just a beautiful soul and an incredibly beautiful person. And she was just really tortured.
When you guys started the show together as co-hosts, you talked about, like, what was the premise of the show?
So a few years ago, so we only started the show in March. I believe it was March. I think we started in March, but the first episode we actually put out was in April. But we had talked roughly about 2 years ago about doing a podcast on depression because she would post on social media about her depression. She was very open about it. And so then I would occasionally write to her and just say, you know, like, I feel you. I'm going through the same thing. And so we would connect a little bit.
Yeah.
And then we talked about starting a depression podcast. And then it never came to pass. She got busy and we didn't do it. And then this past winter, like February, she wrote to me and said, let's do that podcast. I really want to do it. And I was totally down. So I said, yeah, let's start it. So it was basically like coffee talk, coffee talk about depression, but very real, very raw, honest, not politically correct. Just like Stevie was very, very real. I'm very real. And so we didn't really have guests on. We had a couple guests, but it was more just about her and I going in and talking about the journey.
Did she talk about her depression?
Oh yeah. That's all we talked about.
That's all she talked about.
Yeah. And she was always, she never found a good medication. Her medication was all over the place, which personally I think had a lot to do with this.
Sure.
Luckily for me, I found a depression that, or found a depression. I didn't, that's not lucky to find depression. Luckily, I found a medication that I got on and was pretty consistently helpful. It's not like I felt like I was on top of the world, but I just felt more consistent.
Stabilizes you.
Totally.
Yeah.
And she's never found anything like that.
Yeah.
She was also going through, which she talked about on the podcast, this new experimental treatment called transcranial magnetic stimulation, TMS, and we would say it was too much Stevie, for too much Stevie. But what it does is that, like, it's a magnet they put on your brain for 30 days in a row, and it moves your brain or things in your brain around. And other people have had it, like Neil Brennan, he did TMS, and he said it worked pretty well for him.
Interesting.
And there's no, from the looking up that I've done or the research, the little research I've done, it doesn't say that there's any massive adverse
effects. So it's kind of like a shock treatment, but it's with magnets.
Exactly.
So how do you, as her co-host, then go on and continue this podcast? I mean, obviously you're going to go on and continue it, but how was that as a podcaster, as, you know, a personality on the air?
Pretty terrible. Pretty terrible. I almost felt a obligation to her fans to continue doing it because she had a lot of dedicated fans. And I also saw the potential with the podcast. And so I didn't want to cut it off and just sever it right there and just say no, because I still saw some sort of something for it. Obviously, it's not the same, but I only took a couple days, and I was feeling like I just felt, I didn't know what I was going to do. And people were writing to me saying, please continue the podcast, please continue the podcast. But it sucks, you know, it sucks pretty badly when it was just her and I, and we would have, that was the only day during the week I would look forward to. My life, I don't have that much happiness or joy in my life. And that was one thing that I look forward to every week.
Wow.
So after it happened, I took only a couple days, but I felt totally moved. One day I was sitting in my bed, and I actually had her microphone because she was letting me borrow it. 2 days before she passed, she had given me her microphone to borrow. And so I, of course, still have it. And I was sitting in my bed, and all of a sudden I just felt the spirit moved me to do an episode on my own and just talk about Stevie and, you know, just talk about the whole thing and everything. And I didn't edit one thing. It was like just smooth, and I just felt so, not inspired, but it just felt natural. It all just flowed out.
Wow.
And I just talked about her and what you know, everything I loved about her and what happened and how I found out, but also maybe what to do with the podcast and all that kind of stuff. So then after that, I got so many good responses that I thought, okay, I'll continue it, but I waited for a few weeks. So I didn't know in what capacity
I think that is so smart to give yourself the closure. You obviously needed closure and to be honest with it, with your fans, and then go on. It sounds like you did the right thing. I mean, you know, the best thing.
Yeah, but I also had this weird guilt because people were all of a sudden reaching out to me. Like Jeff Garlin reached out to me
That's
do my
so
podcast.
Sweet. Nice.
But I had a weird guilt about it because it was like I didn't want to get attention or reap any sort of benefits because of her suicide. And so I felt very uncomfortable with it. And one day, so this is a really strange, a little of a strange story. I believe in spirits and ghosts and things like that. So I'm open enough to this. And I hate saying ghost in reference to someone that I knew and loved, but spirit, I guess I should say. One day, so I occasionally drive for Uber, which sucks, but I do it. And I picked up a girl for Uber pool, which means there will be more than one person in the ride.
Right.
And it was at nighttime at the Grove in the valet area where I picked her up, which is pretty lit.
Sure, sure.
Even though it's at night. So I pulled up, and I don't usually like to do pools, but Anyway, the girl got in the front seat, which annoyed me. I hate when people just get in the front seat when you're driving Uber and you don't have to get in the front seat, because it's like, as an Uber driver, you're with so many strangers all day that I just bet. Being shoulder to shoulder with them is just weird. Annoying.
Yeah.
And then
Do you have
like
bucket seats?
Bucket seats? No, thank God. Yeah, bench seat. We all scoot up together. No, thank God. But she got in the front and she said, oh my God, because she turned around when she got in the car, she turned around and put her seatbelt on. And when she pulled the seatbelt over her chest, she turned a little bit to put it into the latch, the buckle thing. And she kind of turned, and she turned to say hi to whoever was in the back seat, but there was no one in the back seat.
Wow.
And so she said, oh my, she just paused and went, oh my God. And she's like, I thought there was someone in your back seat. That's why I got in the front seat. She said, I saw someone sitting in your back seat. And I, obviously there was no one in the back seat. And then I said, was it a guy or a girl? And she was like, it was a girl. And, or no, maybe I said, was it a girl? Yeah, I did. Cause I got annoyed that I gave her a leading question, but she said, no, it was a girl. And she was like this tall. And I saw her as I got in. And as I got in and as I walked up by the car, she's like, this is insane. And so then I told her, and Stevie had passed away about a week prior.
Wow.
And so I felt like Stevie was in the car.
Amazing.
Yeah. And the girl I ended up saving, I said, can I get your phone number in case I ever need to like verify, you know, that this actually happened. So I have the girl's phone number, but when she got out of the car, I ended up talking to Stevie on my own.
Yeah.
In the car. And I felt like she was really there. So I talked to her the whole ride home because I really felt like she was in the car. And one of the things that I said to her was that I let her know that I felt guilty for any sort of anything that might be coming my way. And I felt like she, who knows, but I just felt more of a, it's okay.
Wow.
You know, you can move forward with the show and I'll support you kind of vibe.
Yeah.
A little bit, which might sound a little kooky, but it felt like something that I needed. And so then I had Jeff Garland on the show and, you know, didn't feel as terrible about
Wonderful.
It.
Wonderful. And Stevie must be very proud of you. I mean, she would want the best for you, of course. And she would want the best for your show or whatever you want out of it.
Yeah.
I like the idea of the mentally chill. There's a couple other shows I've listened to, you know, about depression and mental illness, but they're all from a man's point of view. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard a lot of women.
Yeah.
So that's really kind of nice.
Well, that was kind of the thing with our show is that a few years ago when we had talked about it, there really wasn't that much for podcasting on it.
Yeah.
And then of course, after we had talked about it, all of a sudden there were a lot of podcasts about depression, and I was frustrated because her and I were both frustrated. We're like, that was our idea, but we didn't do it. So anyway, but our perspective on doing the show recently, even though there are other depression podcasts out there, was that it was going to be like less about interviewing people and more about just getting to know two people with depression and almost having a weekly session of us just talking. And it would be a female thing because I think the other shows out there on depression are great. They all do a similar format, which is interview a new person every week, which understandably is a good idea, but we didn't want to redo that. We wanted to be a little more original.
Right.
And so we also added in some segments that other people weren't really doing. So we have a segment where we talk about, it's called F That Shit. And we talk about weird things in the mental health industry or crazy stories from the psych wards. And so we kind of incorporate a little bit of a kitschy, creepy kind of story, which can be fascinating. And then we also do a funny segment called Who's Sadder, where we compare like two celebrities.
Oh my goodness, and Kristen, you're so funny.
So we wanted to make it more of a funny, kitschy, sassy, every real person.
Well, it's just great. It's just great. So you guys do go over and listen to Mentally Chill podcast. Boy, Kristen, you are such an interesting person. And, you know, the cross-eyed thing is just, it's so interesting because you would never, ever, ever know that about you.
Thank you, Dr. Ludwig.
Amazing, right?
The surgeon, yeah.
I'm so happy that you had that person.
Mm-hmm.
And your parents, I'm so glad you still have your close relationship with them. And your career is doing well.
Yeah, it's okay.
You're doing well.
Yeah, I'm lucky in a lot of ways.
You were just on stage at the Improv playing Story Smash.
I had so much fun, and that is such a good idea for a show.
Oh, thanks.
It really
is. I'm so glad.
Yeah, it was so fun.
Do you like the name change?
I like the name change. I do. I get irritated with the whole, like, we have to, like, bow down to people you know, ruining everything for other people with the gun thing.
Right.
You know, because I think shotgun story worthy is a funny idea and the shotgun sound.
Yeah.
But
now I get it. And the shotgun, I like the idea of shotgun story worthy, like in terms of like a shotgun wedding or.
Right. That's what it means.
Who's
right.
The pressure.
That's exactly
but
how I read it.
The last couple of shows we did at the Improv when we were using the shotgun sound, I'm sitting on stage thinking like, oh my God. And there's just.
Yeah.
And, you can, and it happened like 12 times. And I'm thinking, what are they thinking in the main room?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like this is not right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now we're doing that glass
glass
smashing and we've got a couple different effects. Yeah, I think it's better as well. Thank you for playing that,
by the way. Oh, it was so fun.
Yeah. All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you so much again for tuning in today and listening to Kristen's story, which just turned into so much more. Thank
so
you.
So much more.
Really, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So you guys tweet her over on Twitter at Kristen Carney and follow me over there as well at Storyworthy, of course. And join us next week for comedian Matt Knutson and his story about his brush with the law.
So, of course, I'm driving. I'm trying to slow down in a timely manner, but I see the cop sitting right there where they changed the speed limit with his gun out. Boop!
Don't miss Matt Knutson next week on Storyworthy. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and everybody on the Wondery team. Do you know there's a Wondery team, Kristen?
I did.
There's a team. It's not just the one person.
No, it's a team.
A lot of people doing a lot of stuff over there. And on behalf of the talented and lovely Kristen Carney, thank you so much, really.
Thank you for having
thank
me.
Thank you. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying make it the story worthy of you can.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.